Before we start, I do have a few questions that came through on an email, which the questions actually came up from one of the last sermons. I don't know if you've heard it, the one on, well, yes, you did hear it because you were there, the one on the Sabbath that I gave down at Falfield. And there are three questions that came through on by email. One is, what is a molad? And secondly, what's the Urim and Thummim? And thirdly, what's the ephod? So I thought I'd just go through those three questions and just try and answer them a little bit, because obviously if they've come up from somebody who does know quite a bit about Scripture anyway, the chances are that other people would have had the same kind of question. So what's a molad? Molad is to do with the calendar and how the calendar actually is put together. And the definition, if you want to have a definition of a molad, it's when the moon passes past a line between the earth and the sun. At that precise second, that is the molad. So it's this, theoretically, it's the start of the new month. It's when, because obviously you're at the earth, and the moon is going around the earth, and it goes around the earth once a month. The earth obviously is turning at the same time. They're both going around the same direction. And as it comes towards the sun, it's in the wane, and as it actually approaches that line between the earth and the sun, that precise time, it starts then to wax again. It starts to actually increase in size, visibly from the earth. And the reason that the molads are important is they're important in the calculation. As you calculate the sacred calendar, you can calculate it by, because you know to a precise second as to when that that moon comes across past that line, that is the beginning of the month. But it's not, because in Scripture it says very, very clearly that the light's in the heaven, and it is not when, because when that moon passes that line, it's actually totally black. You cannot see anything because the sun is right behind it. So from the earth you will not see it. So you've got to wait until it goes a bit further past it before you can actually see the first crescent of the moon. And that's one of the rules of postponement. You don't go to the molad. Now, all the other, this calendar controversy, and I do not think it's going to go away, is that they calculate to the molad, which is a calculation when it passes that line. Thinking it's in, and their reasoning is that this is the way it was always calculated in the past. However, that's not what Scripture says. Scripture says it's to be the lights in the heavens and the signs of the seasons, and therefore you've got to wait and postpone the actual molad until that line is visible, and therefore there are certain rules of postponement which certain groups will not accept. They say they are a Jewish invention. They're not entirely a Jewish invention. They're the way in which the Jews have put together the Scriptures that they've found. You also have other postponement rules, such as the one regarding atonement and the Sabbath. You cannot have them side by side, because without refrigeration, you need a preparation day before each of those days, because there's no work to be done. Therefore, that's another rule of postponement. You cannot put those 2 days side by side. And it goes back to Scripture. But that's a molad. The molad is the precise second that moon passes between that line between the earth and the sun, and the new month would actually begin. Now, when we're looking at the ephod and the Urim and the Thummim, really they go together. If you turn back with me to Exodus 28, we find the ephod being mentioned. And as to why it's important, I mean, on the face of it, it doesn't appear important at all. But as we'll read, we'll find that it is quite important. If you notice, starting in verse 2, it says, "And you shall make holy garments for Aaron your brother, for glory and for beauty." So these were quite beautiful garments made for the high priest. "And you'll speak unto all of a wise hearted that I filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, and he may minister to me in the priest's office. These are the garments that you shall make, a breastplate," something across the front, "and an ephod." And an ephod literally is a tunic. It goes both back and front. And it's a tunic which was the upper garment of the priest. "And a robe, an embroidered coat, a mitre, and a girdle, and there be made holy garments for Aaron your brother and his sons, that he may minister to me in the priest's office. And they will take gold and blue and purple, scarlet and fine linen. Now the normal priest would wear white, but the high priest had these absolutely beautiful tunics, and this ephod was part of it. The ephod was actually the tunic. Now, the reason why it was important, if you notice in verse 15, it says, "And you will make the breastplate of judgment with cunning work after the work of the ephod. Shall you make it of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, fine twisted linen, you shall make it." So the tunic, which was the ephod, went over his head, and it was tied at the shoulders, and it actually had gems at the shoulders, and it went over his head, and the ephod then was a pouch. The breastplate was this pouch which was in the front, right over his heart, which was actually attached to the ephod. And it says, "A gold, blue, purple, scarlet, fine twisted linen, you'll make it. Four square it shall be, doubled. A span will be the length, and a span the breadth." So if you can imagine a span of a man's hand, both that way and this way, you had this square over the heart, which was actually fastened onto the tunic, and it all looked as if it was all part of one thing. And that the breastplate is not loose from the ephod, that's the end of verse 28. So that breastplate of judgment was over the hearts of the priests, and it was actually attached to the ephod, so it was part of the ephod. Now the important thing is verse 30, "And you will put into the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Thummim, and they shall be upon Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Eternal, and Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel upon his heart before the Eternal continually. And you'll make a robe of the ephod of all blue, and there'll be a hole in the top of it, in the midst thereof," and so on. So the Urim and Thummim, which was a black and a white stone, according to whether a yes or a no, and the priest could then reach into the breastplate and take out a Urim or take out a Thummim, having asked a question of God, and the answer would then be yes or no. And the thing is that there is, I think it's the actual, I'm not sure, I'm not sure which is yes, which is no, but there is also, within the words, Urim and Thummim, I'd have to go back and do a little bit more research myself, but there is the indication that there were lights, so that the theory is that the stones would actually light up supernaturally. And you could see whether, in fact, God's presence was there when they were asking questions. And something in that order, the Urim and Thummim, there's the word light is intertwined. And something in that order, on this breastplate of the ephod. Now, the reason why it's important, if we go over to 1 Samuel 23, this is where I mentioned about the ephod and the Urim and Thummim. 1 Samuel 23, when David, if you remember, David took the showbread. I mentioned and I said, look, it was very clear that he had inquired of the Eternal, but it was not after Saul. It wasn't to escape from Saul. He'd inquired, the priest had inquired of the Eternal, and the only conclusion you can come to is he'd inquired of the Eternal whether in fact you could let him have the showbread or not. And you can see this actually in effect in 1 Samuel 23. Notice in verse 6, and it says, "And it came to pass when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David to Keilah, that he came down with an ephod in his hand." So he had the ephod of the high priest with him. "And it was told Saul that David was come to Keilah, and Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, and he is shut in by entering into a town that has gates and bars. And Saul had called all the people together to war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. And David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him, and he said to Abiathar the priest, bring here the ephod. Then said David, O Eternal God of Israel, your servant has certainly heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city of my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me up into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Eternal God of Israel, I beseech you, tell your servant, and the Eternal said he will come down. The way he told him was through the Urim and Thummim, because the ephod contained the Urim and Thummim. The priest would put it on. So presumably what we're looking at here is the fact that Abiathar, that's the son of Ahimelech, and Ahimelech, remember, was the high priest. So Ahimelech had been killed, Abiathar escaped, so he was next in line. He put on the ephod, and presumably it lit up, and God answered David and answered the questions of David. So that's the significance of it. And that's why when you see David going and escaping from Saul, it was Abiathar. He would call Abiathar, he would have the ephod, he had had the breastplate, and he was inquiring of God. And this was the way in which they did get the will of God at that particular time. So it's a very important aspect. But that's really what a molad is, what the Urim and Thummim are. As I say, there's a context of lights in amongst this as well. I needed to go and do a little bit more research. It was just, really, this is off the top of my head, but there's certainly I'm not sure which is, whether it's Urim or Thummim, but one of them means light. It would light up. This is another reason why we do not do the lottery or do lots, is because, again, reaching in for a lot, the Urim or the Thummim, and you're pulling out a lot. It was a way in which trying to determine God's will. If you notice, they had lots, that the lot fell upon Matthias over in Acts. That is another reason why we don't do lotteries or this kind of thing, because this is being used to determine God's will. It was something that was used at one time. So those are the questions that came in by email. I thought that might be of interest to everyone.